Okay, gentlemen, we are shortly going to have the great privilege of having our Choshva speaker before that. I hope I'm not going to. I just saw a very nice spot literally just now. I want to just share with you very quickly before we get on to the halachas. Machtzis Hashekel, Machtzis. Very nice. So in the beginning of the set, the Machtzis. So it's very nice. I never heard this before. I don't think so. Anyway, if you look at the word Machtzis, Machtzis means literally half. So the middle word of that is machatzis. The middle word of machatzis. Pardon? Middle letter of the word machatzis. Tzadik. Yeah, tzadik represents normally what action? Tzadik normally the action of tzedakah. Right. So now, if you look at the words, the two letters next to the tzadik, you've got a Chesaniyut. What does Chesaniyut mean? Chai, life. If you're close to Tzedakah, if you do a lot of Tzedakah, you're close to Tzedakah, that gives you life. What are the letters which are far away from the Tzaddik? Is Meis. If you have Mem and Sof, if you're far away from Tzedakah, you keep yourself away from Tzedakah, it's Meis. Pardon? Is Balatum says that? I didn't know. So, we're in line with this. Oh, very nice. You're giving very nice. So, in line with what Gideon says, and then I just saw this beautiful maaser written down, and I get a weekly Dvar Torah from Ayaduna. There he brings the following maaser of Mr. Ornstein. Mr. Ornstein was, you know, the Bate Ornstein in Yerushalayim, the old, like in Me'ar Shorim. There's very old buildings which are called Bate Ornstein. In Me'ar Shorim, in the heart of Me'ar Shorim, Bate Ornstein. They were donated by a very great philanthropist called Mr. Ornstein. I do not know exactly his life and his years, but I know he was one of the very few Yidden in Yerushalayim of yesteryear that actually had money. The great majority of Yidden living in Yerushalayim didn't have much of that. They had lots of other milas, but didn't have much of that. And Mr. Ornstein was once approached by a very poor man, and he said, "Please, can you help me? I've got literally no money. I'm trying to marry off my daughter, and I just have no money." And Mr. Ornstein, with his kind-hearted gesture, without even blinking, he saw this Elch Yid, and he saw that he was very poor. He took his hand and grabbed deep in his pocket and gave him a very, very substantial amount. And he says, "Oh, this is huge." So, yeah, that's, you should marry off your daughter with that money. It was enough to make a chasna, literally. So we're talking about the equivalent of thousands of dollars. "So are you sure?" "Sure, yeah, definitely take this money. But one condition." He said, "What's that?" He said, "Please, the chasna of your daughter, please invite me. I want to be invited to your chasna." He said, "Well, that's all you want?" "Yes, all you want is to please invite me for your daughter's chasna." Fine, okay, the month went past, and that daughter of that poor person got engaged, and the chasna, they arranged the chasna, Baruch Hashem, all the money was purely, fully donated, was all came from that money of Mr. Ornstein. But, as it goes before chasna, and I'm sure Rabbi Feingold can tell us more details about that, got really, really busy, and he forgot the most important thing, because he was so busy, the preparation and everything, he forgot to invite the most important man that really needed to be invited, and there was Mr. Ornstein himself. So he's happy to pay out the whole chasna with one condition, that's to be invited. And he forgot. Simply forget, in the middle of dancing, he suddenly realizes, "Och, I totally forgot to invite Mr. Ornstein." He doesn't know, feels terrible, he feels absolutely like, he feels so silly. All this was, he bangs on the table, he says, "Meirab Rabbi Oistai, dear Anshir Yerushalayim, all this chasna was kind-heartedly donated by Mr. Ornstein. I completely forgot to invite him. He made one condition and I forgot it. I think that the only way I can rectify this is with one thing only. If we all go sing and dance now in the middle of the chasna and khan in the middle, and we go to Mr. Ornstein, who doesn't live all that far, and we're going to welcome and invite him to the chasna now in the middle of the chasna. It's the only thing we can do." And it's a definitely, of course. And they went singing, dancing on the streets of Yerushalayim until they reached Mr. Ornstein's house. And lo and behold, meanwhile, what was going on, that Mr. Ornstein, because he was a famous person and very well-known philanthropist, one of the very few Yidden that actually had money, he was actually marked, he was rubbed out by some Arabs who at that very moment were in his house and literally about to kill him to get all his money and all his wealth. But as they were about to do what they intended to do, there was this great crowd outside singing, dancing, and they got quite scared. They tried to do it in a quiet way and everything, but suddenly this hit us all. And the rest is history because he survived. So again, what's next to the tzaddik is the ches and the yud brings great life, and chasram, someone distanced himself from tzedakah, that brings cholele, the opposite. Rabbi Said, this is a story that I just saw before, recorded by Rabbi Ayaduna in his weekly Right, Rabbi Yisai, we are up to Siman Tov Kuf Mem Ches, and that is the following. This is the halacha. Now, if anybody ever has got an argument with one spouse about holding or not, so this is the proof that it's well worth keeping old stuff. This is the proof, once for good. This is 7 years old, and I'm getting may or may not recall this. And I'm ever so proud. I have the sense of victory, you know? It's good to keep old stuff. So here you go. This is Siman Tov Kuf Mem Ches Vav, as we learned it last time. This is summary of the halacha. So what this is basically telling us, and I'm going to just keep it over here. What is basically halacha is as follows. Let's just go through the halachas first, the shulchan first, and then we're going to go through. So Avu Bishen Avelis Beregel, Sivav. Although we have discussed that there's no Avelis Beregel, meaning if somebody dies on Chalamoed, there's no Avelus Beregel. There's no halachas or Avelus in the middle of Chalamoed. Is that what we learned previously, right? Where is an Avelus Beregel? Pardon? Yeah, Seder Yochid, Seder Rabim, indeed. So, Imeis Lemeis Beregel. So, if there is somebody who does die on Chalamoed. So here's the exception. Miss Askin boy Beregel and Achmoed, the only thing what you are allowed to do is to go and console him. At the end of the day, his close relative was just buried yesterday or today, and he is a bit. He could do with a bit of chizik, right? You're allowed to do that on Chalamoed. Yes, of course, formal avelus is forbidden, but you want to be a mensch, right? You want to be a kind, thoughtful kind of individual, you go and you're allowed to console him. So, Miss Askin by Beregel and Achamoy, no formal Avelus, but you're allowed to go and console him. Ula Acha Regel, and what happens after Yom Tov? What do we say happens after Yom Tov? Sheva, Ula Acha Regel, Kshichlo Shiva Lemitzes Hameis, and Avul Pishadain Lekola Avelus, Melachto Nasseis Ale Deachirim Bevoteim. So what we are saying that starting 7 days from the actual death, there is the halacha that limited work is permitted. His servants are allowed to do quietly whatever needs to be done in the house. Here it is, Rabbi Yisai. So what we've got over here, I don't know if it's clear or not. This is over here, the red represents Yom Tov, or Chol HaMoed. That's where the person was Nifta. Now, during this time, we've learned, no mourning during Regal, but one may console him. This is what we learned over here. So during the Chol HaMoed, person is Nifta, there's halacha, no proper formal avelos, but there is the halacha of one may console him. Now, if you look at the 7 days, which normally would be the Shiva, the 7 days start over here with regards to the most strictest part of Avelus. So there is a distinction between once the 7 days pass of the Misa and the seven prolonged days of mourning which start after the Yom Tov. Does that make sense what I'm saying? I feel like I'm talking a bit. So the 7 days over here, so normally here we're saying that limited work is permitted during the 7 days of mourning after Yom Tov. Once the 7 days have passed, after the actual Ptira, limited work is permitted, which normally, during the whole Shiva, this is also, but here, this is going to be permitted after the 7 days of the actual Ptira. In other words, what we are saying, if I can just rephrase it. Correct. That's it. So, once the 7 days after the Ptira have been completed, limited work, some work activities, which normally is also normal avelus, is going to permit in this instance because, is nitcha the word? There is really the 7 days of mourning are still taking place, but in terms of working.
Just like a fast is nitcha of Shabbos.
Yeah.
So the basis
so he,
is nitcha of Yitzchak, right?
Yeah. So
is
that's.
Is it parallel?
It's comparable, yeah. So that's what we're learning. So again, I'm going through the words of Shulchan Aruch again. Avol pi she'ein avelus beregel, yimeis lames beregel. If somebody does die on Chol HaMoed, he's asking by Beregel Lachmo, you're allowed to console him. That's the halacha number one. But after Regel, Shichlo Shiva LeMitzvos HaMeis, after the Yom Tov, Shichlo Shiva LeMitzvos HaMeis, when the 7 days have been completed from the actual Despite the fact that Avelus, the mourning period of the 7 days after Yom Tov, have not finished yet, yes, you're allowed to, limited work is going to permit at that stage, and the servants are allowed to do some work for him in his house. Normally in Avelus you can't do that, but over here, since it's past the 7 days of the actual Misa, that would be permitted. Also, with regards to consolation, you don't actually have to go to do the nichum aveilim for the days after the 7 days after the Ptira. So in other words, we're saying that there is some elements of the aveilus which is more lenient in that period over here. That's basically what we're saying. This period of year, Havelus is not complete. It's a little bit more lenient. So look at Mishnah Busif Kotten Chov Hei. Ein Tzrichim. V'chein. V'chein en lachem ovel be'erev Shabbos Shachar Regal. Similarly, also, you don't do Nicham Avelim after Erev Shabbos Shachar Regal. Koidim Bochu Beveis HaKnesses. Kenog. Tlak on Erev Shabbos. Before Bochu in Shul, you don't do Nicham Avelim. So in Kvar Ovu Shiva Yomel Mistameis. So the days that what Allah is that it's a lighter version of it's not proper Nicham Avelim taking place at that stage anymore. I don't know if it means that you don't come. I think that if somebody would come, there would still be Nicham Avelim in terms of Chiyuv. In terms of chiyuv of nichum avelim, he is still sitting. He's still sitting shiva. So in terms of, if one goes, one certainly does still nichum avelim. But in terms of a mitzvah of going and consoling him, which normally is a mitzvah to go and do nichum avelim, that really applies within the 7 days after the pir, as opposed to the added. Yeah. There'll be no, yeah. Well, there's similar scenarios which you're going to see shortly. Look at Siv Zayin. What if somebody dies just before Yom Tov?
It's a funny one. It's quite quirky halacha, isn't it? Because if it's an hour before, then he pushes off the whole thing.
Oh, so that's what he says now. So if somebody dies just before Yom Tov, there's even 1 hour. 1 hour before Yom Tov, there's no Shiva anymore. It's the Shiva. It's cancelled. There's no shiva. And the 30 days of the shloshim are counted straight away, despite the fact that the full week of that is Yom Tov. Now, but the very crucial point is, it must be that there was some sort of avelus done in that hour before Yom Tov. But if there was, if it was a shogig, or is it? If for whatever reason may be, there was no formal oval house, there was no avelus, he never actually had the opportunity of actually doing an avelus, or he was just nifted just before nacht, and there was no opportunity at all. So, whatever the reason may be, if there was no avelus, then in a regel mevatel avelus, then the regel does not cancel the avelus. We didn't get in kovah meisu beregel. Now, same halacha would apply to if somebody got buried on Yom Tov. I remember such a shiva, and that was a shiva of Rabbi Duna Zichron Livracha. This is how many years ago? Does anybody know? It was probably about no. His father. He was probably about. I guess he was probably. Maybe 2005, 2007, something like that. Right. Yeah.
But what about Kriya? If he's done Kriya already,
yeah.
Relatives.
So what? You're asking a very good question. What does it mean to be Noeg Avelus? To what extent?
Yeah. So if he's done Kriya already, or if he hasn't done Kriya, can he still do it?
Yeah. So I think that would be fine. I think that's sufficient. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it's sufficient because Mishnah Berurah does say that it loved off kebechalit zanal. It doesn't even have to be that he took off the shoes. So, but if he took down the bed or any other elements of the shiva, then bottom end of the shiva, then there's no more shiva anymore. So anything that you normally do part of the shiva would suffice. So therefore, Rabbi says, so there is, it happens sometimes. So I remember that Taker Rabbi Yosef Tvitono was the Rav of the Rav of London of the Union, and he was nifted on Erev Pesach. He was nifted on Erev Pesach. So all he has, you know, his sons. He was old. All his sons were, you know, grandparents in their own right already, and they literally sat shiva on Erev Pesach. Do you remember what year it was approximately? I think it was about. Do you remember what year? Anybody remembers? About, I just remember that was a famous shiva, and he was and this literally sat shiva for a few hours, if that, and in Eretz Yisrael, the sons would leave in Eretz Yisrael, but then it was even shorter, literally, and that was and there was no shiva. There was no shiva. That was it. So there was officially the Rav of Bezin of London who literally had, you know, he was, the shiv was literally minutes or hours. The Mishnah Berurah points out doesn't mean an hour. Sha'achas doesn't mean 1 hour. It needs to be, as long as there's some shiva taking place before Yom Tov, the shiva is cancelled together. Have you ever experienced it otherwise? A shiva cancelled?
So what if they, you know, it was an hour before there was no time to, then it's not bottle?
If they didn't sit shiva, then it's not bottle. They must have done some shiva activity, some activity. If they didn't do any shiva beforehand, if nothing happened beforehand, yes, then it's as if somebody was nifted on Yom Tov, and you're going to do the shiva after Yom Tov.
Would a person be allowed to not do it, you know, not do it before the chag because he wants to do the 7 days?
No, I don't think he can positively delay it. I don't think so. That would sound wrong. Because, yeah, that would sound wrong. Yeah, Jonathan, you have experienced it. How often does it happen? Erev Yom Tov, any experience in that?
Yeah, with the idea of Yom Tov.
Yeah.
Sit for a couple of hours. Does happen sometimes.
Yeah.
My late mom, she actually passed away on Erev Roshana. In Melbourne. So my there's this chus involved in that. The Chevra Kedisha in Melbourne buried her within a few hours of her passing away. My sister and my brother in Australia, so they literally, you know, we went to the cemetery, came back, sat for an hour or so, and they got ready for Yom Tov. And I had a little bit more time because we were 9 hours behind. I knew the early hours of the morning. And just sat shiva for that kind of half a day, and that was it.
Wow. Right, so there you go. That's exactly what we're talking about. A shiva which is abruptly finished because of Yom Tov. Wow, very interesting, very, very interesting. Very good. So that's the halacha of a shiva being cancelled because of Yom Tov. The Mishnah Berurah does discuss over here what happens about Yom Tov clothing, etc. And he said that's going to be permitted in such a case. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, that's it for now. We're going to be hearing now. No, a bit more. Should we carry on a bit? Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. We carry on. All right. That's not. Okay, very good. Well, so in this case, this very scenario that somebody is, somebody has a shiva and the Yom Tov breaks the shiva. Mevatlim in gzeir shloshim. Mevatlim in gzeir shloshim. Afilu chal shiva be'erev haregel. Afilu chal yom shiva be'erev haregel. Mutar lesaper lechaves be'erev haregel. Afilu chal yom shiva be'erev haregel. Even if the seventh day falls on Erev Yom Tov, mutar, you're allowed to lesaper, to cut, to have haircuts, lechaves, to wash clothes be'erev on Erev Yom Tov. Now, just to explain what the chiddush of here is, because the last day of the shiva. Let's just remember how that works. We're saying now that even if the last day of the shiva falls on Erev Yom Tov, he can make the necessary preparation for Yom Tov. Now, this is really a big chiddush. Because how does that work? The last day of the shiva is normally the seventh day of the shiva. When does a person get up from shiva?
Seventh day.
In the morning. Why in the morning?
Because a small part of the day is considered to be the...
Very good. That means in principle, a person should sit shiva 7 full days. And that should surely include all the way till Nacht. However, shiva should be 7 full days. However, the Gemara says, Mixas Yom Kikuloi. Part of the day is considered like full day. When it comes to Avelus, we don't like to drag it out. We want to keep it as short as necessary. And therefore, Mixas Yom Kikuloi, part of the seventh day is considered as the full day. Now, here we're learning that if the seventh day falls on Erev Yom Tov, already, as soon as he got up from the Shiva, which in principle it is the seventh day of Shiva, it's the seventh day of mourning. Nevertheless, since it's Erev Yom Tov, he's allowed to do the haircuts, he's allowed to wash clothes, etc. What do you mean? It's his seventh, it's his mourning day. It's mourning still, it's the seventh day of mourning. Yes, but Miktsas HaYom Kikulo breaks into the mourning, plus it's Erev Yom Tov, so 1 + 1 equals, he's allowed already straight away to all the necessary preparation for Yom Tov, which is really an awesome chiddush. It's a very, very great apparent leniency. And similarly, the same will apply with regards to washing as well. And you're allowed to wash oneself. You don't have to wait until the night. Yeah, so that will be the
And we don't have to, it's obvious, self-evident that if the eighth day falls on Shabbos, Erev HaRegel, which is Erev Yom Tov, you're allowed to have haircuts on Erev Shabbos. Okay, this is quite, we'll stop over here now. I don't want to. Yeah. Okay.
As I was doing the census, you know, every 10 years we have to do the census. Have you received a letter saying you have to do a census?
Oh, that's coming soon.
Yeah. It's funny, this week I got the letter and I filled it online because of Kisito and the Cedra and counting. And it got me, when I was filling out the ridiculous question, you'll love the questions that they were asking us. Couldn't make them up. But
you could choose now, you could be male or female.
And all sorts of other ridiculous things. It got me thinking about sort of why the Sedra starts with the Ramban says about we're really not supposed to count, and this is expressed by the fact that the Pekudehem is the Pokad is written twice. There's a repetition of Pokad which is to teach that we're not supposed to count people, and therefore we count their things. So I was always wondering why we have, if we're not really supposed to count, why we're being commanded to do it with conditions, and why not just not bother doing it in the first place. So First, we have to understand what's wrong with counting anyway, and secondly, why do we end up doing it? So, to simplify, to dramatically simplify what the Shittas Ramban on this is the error of counting. The reason why inherently it's wrong to head count is because, and why it leads to a plague and that sort of thing, is because by counting, what we're doing is we're restricting ourselves to a number, we're giving ourselves massive physical limitations, and they say that there's no, you can't have bracha on something when you're imposing physical limitations on. That's why all things that have a bracha have to be secret, and so that's in essentially why there's an inherent issue with why counting should be a problem. And that's why we need to do teshuva for it. So that's why the psukim talk about having to do to be mechaper by doing when you do it, and it's connected with kapara. But an answer as to why we do it in the first place, I found turn to my usual the destination of choice when I look for, do I want to find an answer to the question like that. And if you explore as I'm sure Rav Hirsch does, if you explore the etymological reasons for why the word lepokad is used for counting, it's got the etymological twin for pokad is beged, and the reason for that is because as it says here, when you clothing or investing an object with its attributes, placing an object in some sphere or the special sphere which it's characteristic, where we get the idea of appointing an office and counting puts something into a category, puts it into an integral part of an idea and part of a whole. So the way that we square the circle and understand why it's important we do some kind of counting of things in the first place is understanding what we're doing it for. So going back to the census, the census we're filling out is answering questions so that the government and everyone else can know all sorts of intimate details about it. There's no intrinsic value to that sort of accounting, and therefore that sort of accounting's got no bracha and it's not really allowed. But the Yiddish idea of counting is really more of a, but by comparing pokad to beged, the dressing, the putting the enclothing, the bringing inside, what it does is it turns it from being a survey into being an expression of achdus and bringing together of the Jewish people. And really the idea of it is who's with us, who's part of it, like a nas of anishma kind of, you know, if you're in, you're in, otherwise, you know, you're going to be, you know, kofar ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. It's not so much a counting to understand the numbers and get statistics. It's really an achdus thing and a way of each individual member of Kaiser are feeling part of a whole rather than just being themselves, and understanding that Kol Yisrael Avrim Zeh Mezeh, and we've all got responsibility for each other, and we're part of a special people, and that's why.
All I saw was the envelope. It says £10,000 fine if you don't do it. So don't ask them any questions.
Have a birthday for your children.
Yeah, yes. Go email out to do it.
Ask your wife before she gets offended. You know, when you ring her in the middle of the day, or what's the birthday? Dinner, the birthdays. Yeah. Find some other way.